The Friday Reporter launched in March of 2021 as a conversation with today's journalists and has expanded to include newsmakers, lawmakers, image makers, and just about anybody who's in the news or the news adjacent business. The podcast is in partnership with PR Daily and is part of the Big Wig Podcast Network. If you like the show, please hit the subscribe button to make sure you've got ready access to the latest conversation. And if you've got an idea for a great guest, don't forget to send your ideas to Lisa at FridayReporter.com. Well, hello, and thank you so much for joining me for another episode of the Friday Reporter podcast. I am thrilled to have my good friend, who I keep realizing that I quote some of the wisdom that he has offered to me over the course of our friendship back to other people. Amos Sneed is the chairman of the National Press Foundation, the president of Ad Faro, one of the most innovative and sharp communicators I know and work with here in Washington, D.C., and I'm thrilled to have you with me today, Amos.
Lisa, thank you so very much for having me.
I am not really sure where to start. I mean, our friendship is BC, right? Before children, right? We've known each other for like what feels like now a lifetime. And for so many different intersections, from Capitol Hill, from private sector, from referring clients to one another, like we've really been knowing each other a long time. But the reason why I wanted to chat with you today, and I'd like to get into all of that, but I really wanted to talk because this show is about journalism and the importance of investing in and helping journalists sort of get their own personal story out. I really kind of want to get into how in the world you got to be the chairman of the National Press Foundation.
Well, Lisa, again, thank you for having me. And before we start, thank you for doing this. I know it's a resource for me. It's a resource for others. And at this stage of our career, you're giving back and you're putting a path for people behind you to follow. So before we dive in, congratulations on the success. Congratulations on all the guests you've had. And thank you again for doing it. I love, this is going to sound cheesy for a PR podcast, I love communications. I love journalists. I really enjoy working with them. It's why I do what I do. And over a decade ago, I went to this dinner. I went to the National Press Foundation dinner as a guest. And I thought, I kind of like this and I want to get involved. So I got involved with at the time it was called the Dinner Committee, now the Advisory Committee. And what that group does is it fundraises and sells tables and encourages people to come to the annual awards dinner, which I will make a plug, is coming up Thursday, February 15th in Washington, D.C.
Do it.
Visit nationalpress.org.
I'm going to make sure in the notes for the show, I'm going to make sure there's a link and a way for people to find their way to that and to do and get more involved. So absolutely. Yes, please.
Yes. I got involved there. And whenever I get involved with any organization or try to build anything, I encourage people, really cool, fun, smart people, to come along with me. And so I've encouraged for a decade people to get involved with the National Press Foundation. And these are former journalists. These are communicators working at agencies in DC. These are people that are in-house in some corporations, leading trade associations. And it's just kind of been my theory for my professional life: get the best people on the team that you can. And it's grown since then. It's been a wonderful organization to be involved with. It raises money to train young journalists, which I believe in good journalism. I believe journalism is a critical part of a functioning democracy. And any organization that's giving back, I would like to be involved with. So everyone that comes to the dinner on the 15th, you are actually helping to pay for future training of young journalists who are making their career.
I love that. And it's not geeky because honestly, I started a whole podcast about comms people and journalists. So like we are going to geek out and our four friends in Washington are going to listen to this conversation and they're going to tease us. But they also are good at what they do because they love what we do. And I think that the one thing, I mean, you came to Washington, you're an Alabama guy, right? You come to Washington, D.C. How in the world, tell me about that pathway. Like how is it that you made the choice to come to Washington?
I came to Washington, D.C. the first time for an internship. And when I got here, I grew up in Northeast Alabama. I went to school in the state of Alabama. And when I got to Washington, D.C., I was blown away. And I had one of these moments. And there are probably other people who've been on your podcast who've had this moment. I knew I would live here the rest of my life. And I knew I would start my career here. And I knew this is where I wanted to be. And if you just take a step back, don't think about R versus D, red, blue, international, global politics. It is quite amazing that you can grow up in this country, have an interest in politics, move to Washington, D.C., and get a job on Capitol Hill and not just be involved in the process, but actually be in some rooms where big decisions are being made. And it still blows my mind to think about it. And that's how I came. I finished school and came to Washington. My first job on Capitol Hill was at the House Energy and Commerce Committee, answering phones. And I started from there. And I learned that communications on Capitol Hill, right? You would see the member come in or the chairman come in, and he always had the general counsel with him or the staff director or the chief of staff. And then there was a comms person. And as I would look at that as a young 23, 22-year-old, I realized, okay, all of those people have law degrees except the comms person. So if I can get in that room, comms is going to be my path. And luckily, I took to it pretty quickly.
Well, and I've had a lot of friends like make the joke that as we go to these events around Washington, D.C., unless they're at the National Press Foundation or some of these other events that are where all of our people gather, when someone asks you who you work for, they're impressed, and then they ask what you do for them. And then when you say communications, they immediately look over your shoulder to who the next person is that maybe they want to talk to because you are just the comms guy. But I have had this conversation with so many of our colleagues that worked on Capitol Hill. The communicators are the ones who are putting the words in the boss's mouth. So whether or not, yes, of course, we always make sure that the policy is accurate and the legal team has scrubbed it to make sure we're not going to put the boss in any kind of peril. But then the words that the boss uses traditionally are words that we give them to read or to provide for testimony or for speeches or for newsletters. So that to me is like the greatest opportunity. And that's what I continue to talk about. And that's why people like you and me really still love what we do, because we know that there's still a lot of power in being a great and smart communicator. So you spent a lot of time on Capitol Hill, like a good chunk of your career on Capitol Hill, and then got to a point where it was time to make a choice to go out and off of the Hill and to do other things. Tell me a little bit about sort of the thought process and how you ended up in this consultancy space that you are now.
Thank you for the question. So I've worked 5 years on Capitol Hill in different communications roles, and my wife spent 9 years on Capitol Hill. So we were living on the Hill, working on the Hill. We are those people that moved to DC and got as close as we could to it. And you just sort of know, like it can either be, I want to buy a house, or I'd like to have kids, or one of us needs it. But you also, I mean, the people that work on Capitol Hill are driven a lot by beliefs, a lot by ideology, but a lot of it's passion, right? Like they love being there, and they're long hours. The pay is not always great, and sometimes it's not fair what happens on Capitol Hill and some of those offices, but you just keep getting drawn to it because you're passionate about it. And if that passion ever wanes a little bit, then you just sort of know. You know, when you're coming up the escalator off Capitol South and you see the Capitol right there, if it still doesn't give you that chill that you got the second day of your job, maybe it's time to look around. And I was fortunate that when I worked on Capitol Hill, I was there. There was a big shift, right? It went digital, exploded, and Twitter exploded, and members of Congress had YouTube pages. And for any of your young listeners, there was a time that did not exist. And I saw the impact that it was having, not only on the campaign trail, but in policy in Washington, D.C., on Capitol Hill. And no kidding, it was a light bulb moment for me. I thought this could take off downtown, right? Like this could really be applicable to public affairs. I didn't know how to do that. So I went and joined the biggest PR firm I knew about and could join at the time and learned as much as I could. And then when a little over a decade ago, I started my entrepreneurial streak. I really enjoy building. I really enjoy connecting dots, and it's been a passion of mine. So that's what I've been focused on the past decade is working in public affairs, communications, strategic communications for highly regulated industries across the country, some international, but really it's anyone who has something they're advocating for, against, or need to monitor in Washington.
And so that brings you to where you are today, president of AdFaro,
Today.
which is just known in town as being one of the smart and good agencies where people really like to work with one another. Clients come to you because they know that you are just good stewards of communications. At least that's the reputation that you should know is on the street, and the reputation that I know of what you do. How big is the firm now? I know that it's changed and evolved over time. Talk to me a little bit about what AdFaro is today.
Thank you very much for the question about Advero. So we're about 40 people strong, two blocks from the White House. We're downtown Washington, D.C. We keep everyone on the same floor. And we have everything there from capabilities to the account teams to admin to finance. Everybody's in the same open office space. It's a very collaborative and effective environment. I could brag about Advero and the passion that exists there. I should first talk about its founder and its CEO, and that's the late Jeff Mascott, who unfortunately passed away almost a year ago. And Lisa, you will probably remember Jeff from his days in the House Republican Conference. We first got to know each other then. And Washington's an interesting place. We spent some years after that competing against one another. And it was after a successful pitch that Advero won, and he and I had lunch, and he outlined a vision for what he wanted to build. And he described a professional services firm that I thought he was making up. He explained how it was very collaborative and everyone worked together and everyone was in lockstep. And you had these crazy goals and we would hit them every year. And then clients would stay 5, 6, 7 years and staff would stay 10 years. And I thought, none of this is true. And so I went in and met with the senior team, and everything Jeff Mascott said was true. He's built an incredible team, an incredible culture. It's a shame that he's not here, because his spirit and his vision continues to live on with what we're building and the people that are still there working today. So that's Advero, and I'm really, really excited and proud of the firm, but I could not say anything without first mentioning Jeff and what a loss he was, not just to me and to his family and to the firm, but to the community. He was someone that week in, week out was meeting with someone younger, was meeting with someone it may be a competitor. I mean, after his passing, I heard from executives from other firms who were like, you know, Jeff and I would probably every 3 months we'd go for a walk down K Street and talk about life. And I'm like, really? You know, just people coming out of the woodwork, how many people he touched and what an impact he had. And so it's really our mandate now to continue building what he started. But thank you for the question, Lisa.
Oh, I mean, there's no question about it. Jeff is, I mean, that is the legacy he leaves behind. But also, too, I was lucky enough to know him and lucky enough to come to that office space that he had set up and sort of established. And that, I think, really is what really that reputation of what you're now building is the legacy of what Jeff had wanted and the vision that he'd had. And that's so great to hear that it continues to live on. And certainly I'm glad that you mentioned Jeff, because I was going to ask about him, because I do think that he touched a lot of lives. His communications can be a little, Washington can be a little bit sort of competitive. And he always seemed to be someone who, as you said, I mean, even at a time when I was looking for work, communicators, We don't go to websites. We don't go to, there's very few recruiters that do the work that we do. So what we have to do is actually communicate on our own behalf to talk to smart people in the space. And Jeff is someone who absolutely, absolutely is remembered. And as I said, his legacy is absolutely that. So, you know, Washington also is very spirited and very political. It's also very gossip driven. Okay. And so I have to ask, because so many of our friends, really, when I started to think about a podcast, we were all sitting at home during COVID. And I thought, you know, is it me talking about communications? That's boring to me. So nobody else would want to listen, not even my own family. So I thought, you know, what kinds of conversations are, and you and I are probably the most caffeinated humans in Washington, D.C., because we do a lot of coffees, right? I mean, that is really what we do. We do coffees with journalists. We do coffees with communicators. We do coffees with young people, just as we talked about with Jeff. Like, that is something that's very much ingrained in what we do. But when I thought about that, I also was thinking about sort of this smart idea that you and a colleague came up with years before, which was Famous DC. And there was years ago, I mean, everybody had to read it. Everybody had to know it. People love to know more about people in this town. And so talk to me a little bit about that, Famous DC. I know now COVID kind of put it on pause, but I know it's coming back with a resurgence. There's no doubt about it. I can't wait till the day you turn it back on. But talk to me and talk to the listeners about that concept and what it was you guys were doing there.
Hey, shout out to Josh Schultz. He's probably one of the four listening today, Lisa.
Yeah. Hi, Josh.
We're talking to the base. but thank you for the question about Famous DC. Washington's a town that just runs on information, right? It just runs on information. And there were, at the time we started this, our theory of the world was there were two types of websites out there, right? Like, this is right when blogs are taken off, right? Oh, yeah. And the first one was, I'm awesome. Look at me. Here I am on a horse. Here I am in a Corvette, just doing cool stuff. That was one. That was half of them. The other half were just mean, right? Like, look at Lisa. I don't like her headphones. I really do like her headphones. Don't tell your daughter. But, you know, it was just mean. It just said mean stuff. So our theory was, what if we write this thing that's always nice? We don't carry dirty water. We're in the friends business. We give out high fives weekly, and it's never about us. We don't write about us. And I loved it. Josh loved it. And it started out as a fun little hobby that turned into, in 2016, I think we did 9 events around the country, both conventions, 6 debates, presidential candidates. And it was just such a, it was a fun time. And I don't want to say that moment has passed, but it was a different time in 2012 and 2016,
yeah,
working with presidential campaign staff and with journalists who would still talk to one another.
No, well, and that's definitely true. I mean, the world has definitely changed, yeah, since the time you had it, but it was an enviable entrepreneurial moment. And I really admired and really loved what you guys did. And, you know, I, at the top of the show, I talked about this, the fact that I quote back a lot of the things that you've said to me over time. And that one that you just said, being in the friends business is, yeah, I don't know if you coined it, but I'm giving you all the credit for it because I say it so often and I use it as advice to young people too. Like, this town is so, it can be really sort of toxic and can be really competitive. And we are always sort of boxing one another out of whatever it is. But when you're in the consultant space, when you're a communicator, you absolutely are in the friend making business, right? Even if you find yourself, mm-hmm, with an adversary. And that brings me to sort of like, I want to talk a little bit about you partnering up with the DNC chair and the book that you two authored, but that about being, yes, in the friends business, right, is something I say, mm-hmm, all the time. And I think it just reminds us that regardless of your political stripes, we're all here for a common goal. Whether you like a journalist or not is really none of your darn business. You have a job to do, and so do they. You have to make sure that your message is communicated. They have to make sure that the story is balanced. And they have to deliver the story on time to their editors so that it can then be published by deadline, right? And so, yes, so quote, Amos Sneed, to anybody who ever has heard me say that, Amos Sneed is the author of that comment. But then,
I'll take it.
So let's get down to it. So you decide that you and Jamie Harrison, who is the head of the Democratic National Committee, the chairman there, someone that I worked with many, many years ago on another project, decided to put your heads together and talk about how it is to work in Washington, D.C. And the title of the book is Climbing the Hill. How did that come to pass?
Ah, oh, thank you for the question. Jamie celebrated her birthday this week and had a big time in South Carolina. He's
Happy
busy.
Birthday.
Shout out to Jamie or whoever on his communications department is now reading this or listening to it. So Jamie worked for Mr. Clyburn when he was the Democratic whip in the House. I worked for Mr. Blunt when he was the Republican whip in the House. Jamie is from the South. He's Democrat and he was working on the floor. He helped run the floor for the whip. I worked in the communications office. After we both left the Hill, I asked Jamie to be a guest speaker for a group of underprivileged kids who were visiting Washington for the first time from South Carolina. And I knew Jamie would resonate with them. And he came and spoke and didn't charge anything. We were at an Italian restaurant downtown. We had like globs of pizza and he's down there with high school kids telling them this story about how everything he's done in his career. And after it was over, a couple months went by and Jamie asked me to meet him. And he said, how many coffees do you do a week? And I was like, oh man, I don't know, 2 or 3, you know, not like young people asking for advice. And I was like, maybe 2, maybe 5, some week 4, I don't know, but often. He was like, me too. What do you tell them? And I was like, well, I have a checklist of 5. And I started going through my list and he was like, I do too. And then he sat back and he said, we're going to write a book together about this because there's not a practitioner's guide to working on Capitol Hill. Yeah. There's all of these guides about how a bill becomes law or policy or what's the lobbyist or go to open secrets, but there is no practitioner's guide as to how do I get a job on Capitol Hill? Because when you're young and you're trying to get that first job, you know what you keep hearing? It's the most frustrating thing.
Yeah.
You need Hill experience. You need some Hill experience. You know, like, I would love that if someone would just let me answer the phone.
Let me have
or
some.
Open the door here.
Let me have some.
Give me a shot. And so he and I went out and wrote a book together. And we hired an editor. We came up with the proposal. And then Lisa, we shopped it around and nobody was interested in it. Nobody at all.
Yeah.
And so we put it on the shelf. And then 2 years later, Jamie runs into someone in South Carolina who says, "This is so interesting." And he calls and says, "Hey, we have a call with an agent. We had a really quick call, and then they wanted the text in 90 days." So we had to go back and
No
finish and
pressure.
update our book. And then we published the book and we go on a book tour. We did a couple TV hits. Now, this is a book on how to get a job on Capitol Hill, but it's written by a Republican and a Democrat. It's as bipartisan as I think you can get. And so we released it, and then we started talking on college campuses. And Jamie went to Yale, and so we're sitting at Yale about to speak, and he shows me his phone and says, "What do you think of this video?" And it's a campaign video for him. And I was like, "Jamie, what are you up to, man?" And he said, "I think I'm going to do it." And so he left our book tour and ran for Senate in South Carolina. And then he did not win that Senate seat. He raised, I think, the most money at the time for a Senate race.
Yes, it was an impressive
And
campaign.
then, yeah, and then he is now currently the chair of the DNC party. So he's busy. So we have our book tour on hold. We may come back to it at some point, but that is how it was a friendship and a relationship that started when we were just kids grinding it out on Capitol Hill. And it's I hope it's a Washington story that inspires people, that it's not everything you see on TV that people are yelling and screaming at each other here.
Well, we're going to put it in the show notes as well, because I think it's
Thank
the
you.
kind of thing that really, especially for kids who are outside of Washington, D.C., who don't get a chance to come have coffee with people like you or me or Jamie, that is a resource that would really be tremendously helpful to them. and yes, he's been a busy guy, and you're absolutely right. It is so rare now. I feel like you and I are so fortunate, and so many of our friends who are our contemporaries are so fortunate to remember a time when we would duke it out on the floor, and we would fight it out over, the newspaper in between. But then we could go out to, wherever, Politiki, Capitol Lounge, wherever the tune in, wherever
Rest in peace,
any,
Cap
wherever
Lounge.
you like to get your favorite art, rest in peace, all many of them. But we could go
Yes.
out and be with our friends who are Republicans and Democrats and whatever, people that weren't even in our business, and really sort of, settle the day, put the day to rest, and then come back to it. So it's a different time.
Yeah.
It's a different time now.
It's a different time. I think there's still some there. Like if you watch baseball, if you watch the Yankees and the Red Sox, right? Like they hate each other. Their fans hate each other. They've hated each other for 100 years. But when the cleanup batter gets a single and he's on first base, the first baseman and him, they're talking. They're friends,
Yes.
right? And then you
Yeah.
realize, like, oh, so the superstars can talk to each other. The leaders can talk to each other, even if everybody else is mad. And once you realize that, it's powerful. Once you realize that you can talk to someone who has a different opinion, a different vantage point in Washington, I think it's powerful.
Yeah. Well, it is a different time. But I do hope and that we'll transcend this time and that we'll see it come back to being the case, even if the leaders can get together. So as we get to the end of our conversation, when you're not
Yes.
communicating, when you're not advocating, when you're not doing the work you do, what keeps you busy outside of politics and communications?
I have a question. I have three wonderful kids. It's the best, most rewarding job you could ever have is to be a parent. I'm just lucky and blessed that we've been given this opportunity, and I spend a lot of time with my kids, and we spend a lot of time focused on fitness and wellness and together. And when COVID started, I was doing one of these for Ed Farrow, and my guest was Rick Klein from ABC News.
Oh,
And
nice.
so we had like 3 minutes before it started, and it was June of 2020. I will never forget this. And Rick said to me, he was like, "Hey, Amos, you got kids, right?" I'm like, yeah, they're young. He said, "You'll never have this much family time ever again in your life. Enjoy it." And I'm like, oh my God, did Rick Klein just change my life? And then we did the interview, but it totally changed our mindset of how we went into COVID. And I know people approached it in a much different way, but that's my passion. My passion is building teams, connecting people, and time with my family.
Oh, I love that. I love it. And I'm staring down the barrel of college applications and college acceptances, and hopefully it's going to work out well. It's definitely going to work out well. But you're absolutely right. And I think that Rick's advice is good, is that as busy as we are in our everyday lives, trying to find the balance between the two is still really important. And it's something that I think we all sort of work towards, is trying to make sure that we do really well in our professional life, but also make that great impact now while the kids are still little. All right, so
100%.
last question of the
Yes.
conversation is always, who should I ask to be a guest for a future conversation?
Oh, I like the question. It's not a DC way. I'm going to have to give a two-part answer.
Okay.
The first part, and they're both going to tie back to the National Press Foundation. Last year, the recipient of the chairman citation was Moshe Anunu, who has a big, powerful news platform called Mo News. He worked for CBS, Bloomberg, Fox. He worked in TV for a while. And he started this independent news channel during COVID. And it's just quite remarkable. He's reaching an audience that has turned off the news. He's reaching an audience that said, we're done with this. And he's brought him back in. And I think it's powerful and it's the future. I think that would be a great interview. Or I can give you a whole link. There is a group of young fellows at the National Press Foundation that probably some of the best of the best. I would take a look at any of those. Look at the National Press Foundation Young Fellows list. These are future stars. And if you can grab any of them now, 10 years from now, you'll be able to say they were on the podcast back when. We knew Taylor Swift before she was big.
Well, I love that. And I totally think that, well, for now, the show is not going anywhere. So 20 recommendations is better than two. So thank you. Thank you for all of that. And let's remind everybody again. So the National Press Foundation is having their dinner next Thursday night, or for those of you who are listening to it late, shame on you, make a donation to the National Press Foundation. One last time, one last plug for what's coming up next week.
Yep, Thursday night, the National Press Foundation annual awards dinner. It's the 41st, will be taking place in Washington, D.C. They'll honor Al Roker, Monica Richardson, Dorothy Butler Gillum, and honor Evan Gershwitz.
Awesome. I'll bring him home, please, soon.
Yeah, nationalpress.org if you'd like to learn any more.
Awesome. Okay, good. Well, we're going to put it in there. We're going to make sure everybody knows. Amos Sneed, I'm so lucky to have your time today. Thank you. Thank you so much for being a guest.
Thank you. Congratulations again on everything, Lisa.
Well, there you have it. Another episode of the Friday Reporter podcast. Thanks so much for tuning in. I love having this show. I love you to be part of it. Thanks again. Thanks to PR Daily for being a partner. And thanks to the folks at Big Wig Podcast for letting us be part of their network. See you soon.